Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Medical Monday, September 23rd. I'm Ray Graff. Support comes from CHP Berkshires, now enrolling children and families in Parent Child Plus, a home mentoring program for school-bound toddlers and their parents in Southern Berkshire County. CHPBerkshires.org to learn more. September is Prostate Cancer Awareness Month, and we talk urologic oncology today with Dr. Jonah Marshall of Capital Region Urology, a practice of St. Peter's Health Partners. Dr. Marshall practices urologic surgery. He specializes in nerve-sparing prostate surgery, complex kidney surgery, and began his career as a pioneer in urinary reconstruction. If you have a question, give us a call. Get in line. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. We'll be back after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. September is Prostate Cancer Awareness Month, and our guest today is Dr. Jonah Marshall, board certified in urology. Dr. Marshall practices urological surgery. He specializes in nerve-sparing prostate surgery, complex kidney surgery, focusing both on cancer control and overall quality of life. Dr. Marshall started his career as a pioneer in urinary reconstruction. He received his medical degree from the University of Rochester School of Medicine and Dentistry and completed his residency at the University of Rochester Medical Center. It's an awful lot of time in Rochester. Give us a call at 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551 if you have a question, or email voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Marshall, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Ray. Thank you very much for having me on, and it's great to be here.
It's been a couple of years now. When were you on last?
I think it was just at the beginning of COVID.
Oh, yes. Everything seems to be a blur prior to that, but I knew you've been on a couple of times. Well, great to have you back on the show. As we were chatting just briefly before the program, you said there have been some advances in prostate cancer detection or treatment. What are we talking about here?
Well, there have been some very interesting advances that actually combine the two. The first thing was detection. There's something called PSMA, which is a prostate-specific membrane antigen. It's an antigen that is on all prostate cells, and if there's a mutation in that antigen, it shows only prostate cancer. And so we're able to make an antibody to that mutated antigen, which shows prostate cancer in your body but nothing else. And so there's a PET scan which can identify prostate cancer, but nothing else. Most PET scans are for anything that's growing quickly, but this is a prostate cancer-specific PET scan, and I think there'll be lots more of these types of PET scans for other types of cancers in the future, but prostate's sort of broken through as the first cancer-specific PET scan.
And, lucky for you.
Yeah.
How would this potentially be a game changer for you?
The next step to being able to detect prostate cancer is being able to use this mutated antigen or specific antigen to specifically target prostate cancer and not normal cancer cells. So there are new techniques and new therapies now, which are only for advanced prostate cancer, but new therapies where they go in and give you an injection of this antibody. It's called Pluvicto is the name of the medicine, and it goes into your body and only kills prostate cancer cells.
Wow. That's really great. So Dr. Jonah Marshall, and by the way, if you want to call in and get your question in for Dr. Marshall, good time to do it is now. 800-348-2551. Prostate Cancer Awareness Month is till the end of this month. It's September. And if you want to email your question, voxpop@wamc.org. You mentioned firefighters. Just before we went on the air, you work a lot with firefighters. Why?
So a few years ago, we started noticing that there were a lot of young men coming into the office with renal cell carcinoma, so kidney cancer. And it just seemed strange that so many of these young men were coming in with the same disease. There were bladder cancer as well, but it just seemed to be a cluster of them, and it all clustered around one particular fire department. And that sort of brought up our awareness bells sort of were going off. And after doing a little bit of research, it became clear there's a fair bit of evidence out there that when firefighters are exposed to various toxins, whether that's in the fire suppressant, the PFOA, or whether it's in the plastics that are burning because all of our houses are filled with kids' toys, which as we all know, are made
of plastic. Yeah.
Instead of wood. So those toxins are being exposed and released when the fires go. And these men are and women are being exposed to carcinogens in a manner that we have not seen in the past. And so now the incidence of cancer is increasing in these people.
Above the baseline for the age group statistically, how far up are we? In other words, how many more incidences are there?
So while the incidence is still fairly low, it's still a threefold increased risk.
Wow. Okay. Dr. Jonah Marshall joins us today, 800-348-2551. I'm sure you don't want to say the specific fire department, correct?
What we've done is reached out to a number of the different fire departments and have invited them to send. First, we were going out to the departments and doing screening where we were doing ultrasounds to look for renal masses, checking the urine for blood in the urine, getting PSAs done to look for prostate cancer, checking thyroids, testicular exams. Checking everything because we wanted to make sure that these people weren't having undiagnosed cancers. It got a little cumbersome to go out to all of the different departments, and so now we've set up screening visits every couple of years for the departments to send their firefighters into the office to get checked out.
Why the thyroid? Why are you checking the thyroid?
Thyroid cancer also is increased in firefighters. So, you know, of course, I only focus on the urologic cancers, but
right.
There's lots of different things.
So I assume there is a massive research trying to figure out what the chemicals actually are that are leading to this increase. We've heard about PFAS, we've heard about PFOA and all these other ones, but you're not sure yet what is the actual cause of this rise in cancer, kidney cancer.
No, we're trying to increase awareness and the importance of being able to raise money for the departments to be able to get the correct cleaning apparatus and be able to change their clothes and change their protective gear so that they're not continuously exposed and bringing it home. Like, these are the things that we're really trying to promote.
We're joined today by Dr. Jonah Marshall, and we are going to hit the phones here before the break. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll start with Anita in Clinton, New York. Hi there, Anita. You're on.
Hi. Thank you, Ray. Doctor, my friend, who is in her 80s, had a kidney removed in June. And I'm wondering what kind of a special diet or special care she needs.
So, Anita, thanks for calling in, and I'm sorry that she had to have her kidney removed. A lot of it depends on what the baseline kidney function is ahead of time. So if her kidneys were functioning normally and one kidney was removed, then she should be just fine, just drinking plenty of water. If she had some problems with her kidneys ahead of time and you remove one kidney, then you have to be more worried about protein overload, cutting down on the amount of protein, cutting down on the amount of sodium. So it really is patient specific, and it all depends on how you start out.
Go ahead, Anita.
Thank you.
Oh, thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. Dr. Jonah Marshall is with us today. We'll take another one. Let's go to Kinderhook. Bob, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking the call. I have a question about prostate cancer, and it's concerning my PSA. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay. In 2022, my PSA was 3.2. In 2023, it went up to 4.9. In April of 24, this year, went up to 6.9. I saw my urologist in May, and she wanted it repeated about 4 months later. So it was repeated in August, and now it's up to 9.5. Quite alarming to me anyway. What can I do to find out whether I have prostate cancer?
Well, Bob, thank you very much for calling in. I think I'll take a minute just to explain to everybody listening what PSA is. So PSA is prostate-specific antigen, and it's a enzyme that's really high inside the prostate and low in your bloodstream. As we age, our PSA levels slowly go up and up. But for men under 40, your PSA should be less than 1. And for men that are over 70, your PSA is usually somewhere between the 2 to 3 range. So as you get older, it does...
75 and a half and a former firefighter.
As you get older, it certainly can go up, but if it goes too high, there's certain things that can trigger your PSA to go up, and those things normally would be infection, any type of trauma, and of course, prostate cancer. So we know patients with prostate cancer, their PSA goes up a lot faster than other patients. And so when we see that rising PSA, that triggers us to try to diagnose and treat the prostate cancer early before it's had a chance to spread. So normally, if somebody's got a rising PSA, Bob, we do an MRI of the prostate. The MRI can find out if there's any suspicious lesions in the prostate. Other things that we've started doing, if somebody's PSA gets really high, we might jump right to that PSMA scan that I was talking about before.
All right, Bob, thanks a lot for the call. Number here is 800-348-2551, and we'll get back to the phones in a moment right after the break. Before we take that break, Dr. Marshall, it is Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. What's the guideline for the first visit, and how often should people go? And why is it so important to check and find it early?
Well, thanks for asking, Ray. Unfortunately, the guidelines for checking PSA and screening for prostate cancer are really quite confusing.
Okay.
Because there was a period of time when everybody was getting their PSAs checked on an annual basis. And then the government, USPSTF task force, came out and said we should stop checking PSAs on everybody. And the incidence of advanced prostate cancer went way up.
Oh.
So they've rolled back and said you need to have a discussion with your physician about when to get your PSA checked. So it's really pretty vague. So I'm going to give you my recommendation.
Yes.
Which is not the official recommendations, but my suggestion is that everybody should get their PSA checked when they're 40 years old. Get your PSA checked. If it's one or less, check it again in 5 years. If it's above one, you should be checking it every year.
Hmm.
After age 50, you should be checking it every 1 to 2 years. And a slowly rising PSA is fine. A quickly rising PSA should raise flags. If your PSA is greater than 4, you should be seeing a urologist.
So the last caller, who was 75 plus, had a PSA of 9, I think he said. Does that make alarm bells go off for you?
Absolutely.
Really? And so can people have PSAs? You said there are, you know, trauma or infection can cause PSAs to rise, but 9 is pretty high. Is that always going to be cancer, or can more mundane things cause it to go that high?
Yeah, so very good point. One thing I did not mention that can raise your PSA is BPH, benign prostatic hypertrophy. And as we get older, as men get older, our prostates continue to grow.
Why is that?
Because God does not like us very much.
All right, good answer. Let's take a break on that happy note. 800, we had a rabbi in here a little while ago. We should have asked him that question. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Our fund drive starts October 14th here at WAMC, and the lockbox is open right now. You want to shorten that fund drive? Make a pledge. You can do it online, wamc.org. It's a secure online pledge 24/7. If you want a premium, sure, check out the pull-down menu. You can see all kinds of great premiums. We would love to get your pledge in the kitty right now. Everything counts on day one of our October fund drive. It's Medical Monday, 800-348-2551. That's the number on this program. Dr. Jonah Marshall joins us today. It is Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. And let's see here. A couple of emails, and then we'll go back to the phones. This is from Jay. Is a five-year remission from prostate cancer, meaning that there is a better chance of it not coming back? I did not have the surgery because I was 69 years old at the time. Gleason score 9 and seemed to be only just outside the prostate. And that's from Jay. That's all I got.
Yes, that is it is a great sign that you're 5 years out and do not have any remission. For prostate cancer, the treatments are either to do surgery, remove the prostate, or do radiation. And with high-risk prostate cancer, we do radiation and hormones. And regardless of the modality of treatment, whether it's surgery or radiation, if you're 5 years out with no evidence of disease with a high-risk prostate cancer, that's certainly a good thing.
Okay, this one's from John. PSA versus PSMA test is the subject heading. John writes, I just heard the doctor mention the new PSMA test. I get yearly PSA tests as I have prostate cancer history in my family. Is PSA the best screening test? I think digital exams have fallen from favor, ? I want to make sure that I am proactively screening, and that's from John.
So just a quick mention on the prostate exams. I think it's important that patients get an annual prostate exam, whether that's done by your primary care physician or a specialist. It's important to be getting it done once a year because there are prostate cancers that can be picked up on exam that will not have a rising PSA. So I think that that is a very important part of the annual exam and should be done in all men over the age of 50.
All right, Frank writes in, please comment on green light laser treatment, its purpose, the pros, the cons, the risks.
Green light laser treatment is a non-invasive treatment for BPH if your prostate's big and it's keeping you up because you're peeing and waking up three, four times a night. If your urologist does a scope and looks at your prostate, if the anatomy is favorable, it is a way to vaporize the prostate. It is very cool. It's sort of Star Trek-y in that.
Is it argon laser? What is that? What makes a green light?
So it's the wavelength of the laser, and it fluoresces. The wavelength is in the green spectrum, and that's why the, I forget exactly which laser it is, but it's a laser that is used to ablate the prostate, and it does cause vaporization of the tissue. It's great for patients who cannot stop their blood thinner because there's very little blood loss, but there does have some downsides. Number one, it's not very durable. Usually you have to have another treatment, usually somewhere between 4 to 6 years. And number two is it causes a lot of irritative symptoms. People feel like they have to pee frequently after that procedure.
Why is it not durable? I mean, you're basically cauterizing it, right? That's why people on blood thinners can go with it. It seals it off right away, blood?
It's more than cauterized. It's truly vaporizing it into dust. But you're not able to remove as much tissue as you can with some of the other treatments. One of the newer treatments is aquablation, which is a new treatment for enlarged prostates where we actually shoot water jets into the prostate that destroy the prostatic tissue. But the gold standard is a simple prostatectomy or suprapubic prostatectomy, and that's now done robotically. So it's done in a minimally invasive fashion, and that's the best way to remove the most amount of tissue.
While we're on the topic of robots, the press people over at St. Peter's sent out one of their many press releases, and this was about DV5. And what's DV5, and do you use it, and why?
Yeah, I mean, I think our press people do a fantastic
job.
They
sure do. Most of them, this they certainly do.
And one of the DV5 is the newest iteration of the Da Vinci robot. So Da Vinci is made by a company, Intuitive, that's an American company based in California, and they pretty much have the market on surgical robots, at least for urology, general surgery, gynecology. And their robots started out as these big clunky instruments that I first started using in 2003.
Yeah.
And they've really scaled down the size quite a bit. And one of the biggest complaints about the robot was that there was no tactile feedback. The way it works is I stick my head in this little console, I stick my hands in gloves, and then we attach these instruments and put them through tiny ports in a patient's body. And then everything that my hands do is gets mimicked inside the body.
How long did it take you to get comfortable with that?
I mean, 6 years.
Really? 6 years to get, because you're putting your hands in basically what? Gloves that read the tension of your hands or whatever. But I mean, doesn't it? There has to be a certain amplification or magnification of your moves. Don't you have to learn how to do that?
So there's different settings, and you can set it to scale the movements however you want. I mean, I prefer to have no scale, so everything that I do gets mimicked exactly, but you can scale it 1 to 2 or 1 to 5, you certainly can adjust the scale. But the amazing thing about this surgical machine is that it really is intuitive. When I've had it, there was a period of time where we had it set up in cross gates and we were letting kids come in and use the surgical robot, not the one we use in the operating room.
What could go wrong?
And you would be amazed at how good the kids were sitting on that and doing it. So the dexterity, I mean, anybody can do surgery with a robot.
That's crazy talk. Mike in Rexford writes in, when a prostate gland is measured on a CT, MRI, or an ultrasound, its size is expressed in centimeters or cubic centimeters. Why do urologists tend to express the size of prostate gland by its weight in grams?
So The majority of the tissue is the same as water, and so weight in grams is equivalent to volume, and volume is what helps us decide the best way to do surgery. So something with a small volume can have a straightforward procedure, like something like the UroLift procedure that pushes open the sides of the prostate. So if your prostate's bothering you, you could have that procedure for a smaller prostate, and those are called missed procedures because they have very little sexual side effects. For larger prostates, we do other procedures such as the green light laser or the TURP, transurethral resection of a prostate. And then if your prostate is huge, if you're winning awards for how big your prostate is, and that's based on these sizing criteria, right, greater than 100 grams, we do a simple prostatectomy.
Okay, fair enough. Let's go back to our phones. Dr. Jonah Marshall is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Stephen is in Troy. Stephen, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm 36 years old, and I've started to experience some hesitancy and also bladder avoidance issues. So I had an appointment. They did some blood work and urine tests, and those came back as all good. And I'm just wondering when I should start to be concerned that it might be a cancerous thing or kind of what my next step should be.
So thanks for calling in, Steve. I think certainly anybody who's having symptoms should certainly talk to their physician and, if necessary, come and see a urologist. When you're having symptoms where you're having to urinate frequently, it's important to check the urine and make sure that there's no infection, make sure there's no blood in the urine, and check your blood work. At that point, I would check a PSA, even though you're under 40. Checking a PSA is something that probably was done already. As long as that's normal, then unfortunately, you got a prostate that's causing trouble at an early age and you're in line for some type of help. I mean, this has been plaguing men for millennium. The ancient Egyptians talk about this.
They do not. Do they really?
Oh, yeah. Ancient Egyptians used reeds to open up the prostate.
I'll be darned. Okay. And, would they have that written on the side of the pyramid? How do you know that?
It's in cuneiform.
That's amazing. Stephen, you want to follow up?
I do, yeah. Thank you for that information. I did see a urologist, and, you know, based on the results of what we had seen, we didn't go the route of a prostate exam, but they did get a script for Flomax, and I've been a little reluctant to take it. So I just wanted your advice on that, if you could give any.
So Flomax is a drug that's been around, the mainstay for treatment of prostate enlargement, BPH. Is two different drugs. One is Flomax or Tamsulosin, and it relaxes the muscles in the prostate so that the urine can get through the prostate easier. It starts to work in about 24 hours, and maximal effect is in 7 days. And it works great. I mean, it's a terrific drug with very few side effects. The other drug of treatment that we use is something called finasteride, and that actually decreases the size of the prostate. That takes a month to work and 6 months until you have maximal effect. And those two drugs have dramatically reduced the number of people needing surgery for their prostate. But for somebody young, I would normally start with Flomax.
Okay, Stephen, thanks a lot. Finasteride, isn't that used for antacid?
No, you're thinking of famotidine.
Okay. All right.
Finasteride is the active ingredient in Rogaine.
Well, I'll be darned. Okay, let's go to Ralph on Long Island. Ralph, where are you on Long Island?
On the North Shore.
All right, man, you're on. Go.
Thank you. Doctor, I was wondering, what are the alternatives? I'm 76 years old, and I recently had an MRI at the beginning of the year, and fortunately, there are no lesions. My PSA around that time was about 5.7. My urologist basically said that there's three alternatives: orthoscopic reduction of the prostate, the size of the prostate. Oh, yeah, it's very enlarged. I'm sorry. I think I neglected that. Unfortunately, I don't have the report in front of me. I got to sign into the MRI company, and I couldn't do that while I was waiting for your call. Anyway, the first alternative was orthoscopic. The second was conventional surgery, go in and cut the thing out. Or he said that there's a urologist on Long Island that has this device, whatever it is. I don't know if it's chemical or metallic or whatever. and he inserts it through a vein that reaches the prostate, and it slowly, over a period of a year and a half, reduces it. And that sounded to me like the all three alternatives that were only offered by this doctor. And I'm just asking here, are those the only three alternatives? By the way, I did ask this question about whether or not I could continue to have some kind of sexual life. And with all of these three, he said no. And I just walked out the door dissatisfied.
Okay. Go ahead, Doc.
So treatment for enlarged prostate or BPH is usually symptomatic. So if patients are symptomatic, if you're waking up multiple times a night, or if you are not emptying your bladder well, or if you're pushing or straining to urinate, all those are reasons for us to proceed with some type of surgical intervention or some type of intervention, whether or not it's surgical. And then there's other things such as bladder stones or recurrent infections or serious infections. Any of those things would trigger us to say you need something done. If it's not you need something done, it's do you want to have something done? And when you're deciding, do you want to have something done, it all is pros and cons, and you really have to weigh it yourself. No, those are not the only options. There are a multitude of options for treatment for BPH. And as surgeons, as urologists, we've been trying for decades, scores of years, to figure out something that's perfect that has no side effects. The missed procedures that I mentioned before, such as the UroLift procedure, it pushes open the prostate, but does not cause any erectile dysfunction and does not cause any ejaculatory dysfunction. Flomax that we talked to another caller about earlier,
I'm taking Flomax.
One of the things it does is it makes it so when you orgasm, there's no ejaculate that comes out because everything goes backwards into the bladder because it's relaxing the muscles. Then there's the TURP procedures that you were talking about. So those make it so that there's no ejaculate as well. I mean, that's sort of the function of the prostate. And so if we're working on the prostate, sometimes it does change the way our lifestyle is in a small way.
Ralph, thanks a lot for the call. If it goes backward, I don't want to get into this too deeply, but if it goes backwards into the bladder, okay, there's only so much room in the bladder. Where's it going to go?
The bladder can stretch quite a bit, and the volume of ejaculate normally is around 2 to 3 milliliters, so it's a very small volume.
Okay. All right, well, let's leave it there. Let's go back to the phones, and Ron is in Hudson Falls. Ron, you're on.
Hi. I am a 68-year-old male. I have prostate cancer. It's been diagnosed, and I am scheduled to be treated with radiation coming up. My issue is that I have a couple other things that have come along. A knee problem that's fairly serious, so I'm debating between whether I choose radiation or surgery, since surgery is a quicker, over, sooner procedure. What are the pros and cons of electing surgery versus electing radiation to treat my cancer?
That is absolutely a good question. If we look at the NCCN guidelines, National Comprehensive Cancer Network guidelines, they list both surgery and radiation because both have very similar outcomes. And the differences are between the side effects. Really, with surgery, you've got the side effects up front, and then you get better. With radiation, there's almost no side effects to having the radiation, and then they accumulate over years. So both have their downsides. And for prostate cancer, both are fairly equivalent for the first 10 years. After 10 years, surgery has better cancer-specific outcomes and less recurrence with surgery. So if you're trying to decide which one to do, it really comes down to a decision. I am a surgeon, and I am definitely biased towards surgery. Sorry, but that's,
you're allowed. It's fine.
Generally speaking, that's what I recommend. However, if patients have some other medical problem where I think they're not a good candidate for surgery, then I certainly steer them towards radiation. Did you have any more specific questions?
No, I don't think so. It's like radiation takes time. it's like a 8-week period or something, and that's if you don't do the
hormones,
the injections therapy ahead of time, and which makes it even longer. And so I'm trying to balance the other things because I'm going to need a knee replacement sometime soon as well.
Okay.
And
that's a different show.
So
I know that's
a different show, but
okay.
it impacts what I elect for my prostate treatment.
Gotcha,
so
All right, well, let's finish this one up real quick, Doc, and then we'll take a break. We're overdue. Ron, thank you for the call, but go ahead, finish that up.
Basically, what I was saying is for the decision between radiation and surgery, it can go either way. For younger patients, we usually strongly recommend that they have surgery. For older patients, we usually strongly recommend that they consider radiation because the risks of surgery are greater. And that cutoff for me is usually in the mid-70s, going one way or the other. But it certainly depends a lot on the patients. And the good news for you, Ron, is that there are great treatments available for prostate cancer, and whichever one you choose, you're going to have a good outcome.
Ron, thanks a lot. We're going to take a break right now. 800-348-2551. That's the number. Dr. Jonah Marshall is here. We'll be back with more of your calls and emails coming up. Not to belabor the point, but have you made your pledge to the lockbox? It's WAMC.org. If you want to make your secure online pledge, every dollar counts. The first moment of our October fund drive, and it begins October 14th, I believe it's 6 a.m. So WAMC.org. It's Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you. We're joined by Dr. Jonah Marshall, and this email from Anonymous. Subject heading, sex and the prostate. I'll ask the question that's the elephant in the room. How is sexual activity, or the lack thereof, affecting the prostate? Please speak of prevention or occurrence. And that's from Anonymous, although I do have his name, but I won't say it.
So if I understand the question correctly, it's asking how sex prevents prostate cancer, or the health of the prostate
right.
is related to sex. And simply put, the more times you orgasm, the better or ejaculate, the better it is for the prostate. So I have been known to occasionally write prescriptions for patients, it is important to exercise the prostate like everything else in your body. That is one of the things that's important for prostate health. So the things that you can do to keep your prostate healthy are regular exercise of your entire body. Not just the prostate, but the entire body.
Yep.
Eating foods that are high in omega-3s, such as cold water fish, salmon, tuna, cod, and foods that are high in lycopene, such as tomatoes, and foods that have a lot of antioxidants. I often recommend red wine. So a dinner with salmon and red wine and red sauce on top pretty much does it, and then exercise for the prostate.
So you actually write prescriptions, say, hey, get a little hey-hey?
I have been known to do that.
Really? Oh, that's very interesting. Dr. Jonah Marshall is our guest today, and we'll go back to the phones in a moment. This email from Jan, it's a little longer than we like here on the emails, but we'll do it. RCC and cancer is the subject heading, and it's from Jan. My late husband died at age 63 of renal cell carcinoma with Mets to his brain 2 years later. He lived with RCC for 4 years, died in hospice care at home. He smoked a pipe or cigarettes until age 32. He did not have prostate issues. We also heated our home with wood. Some wood smoke would be in our home, but rarely. My concern, as a 73-year-old woman who lived with secondhand smoke, wood stove smoke for 20 years, do women get BPH? I have some prostate enlargement style and symptoms, slow and intermittent urine flow at night only, no stones, no pain, just intermittent flow. Can take 10 to 15 minutes to empty my bladder after being reclined for 3 or 4 or 5 hours. Urology NP prescribed Tamsulosin that did not help my symptoms. Secondly, my mother had bladder cancer surgery, urostomy at age 80, very stressful for her. I wonder what to report to my primary care physician and help him diagnose and prevent any trouble with urinary tract and cancer issues. What blood work, PSA on a woman? Question mark.
I got to tell you, Ray, that one threw me for a loop. I did not see that curveball coming. I thought we were going to be talking about kidney cancer, which I'm happy to discuss.
Yeah.
But this sounds more like somebody who probably has, and I hate to make a diagnosis just on a description.
Yeah.
But when women in their 70s and 80s are having difficulty urinating, oftentimes it's because of a bladder droppage or a cystocele, which causes a little kink in the urethra. So the most important thing is to get a very thorough physical exam.
All right. Ned writes, prostate TURP. I had a TURP last year, and my urologist said I would most likely have retrograde ejaculation as a result. But in fact, I have strong ejaculation, which my urologist can't explain. Any ideas? And that's from Ned.
Well, I think Ned's urologist did an excellent job of sparing the area around the bladder neck.
Yeah, okay.
What happens during normal ejaculation is the bladder neck tightens down, and that's why the Flomax causes it to relax, causes retrograde. When you're doing a TURP procedure and resecting, if most of the tissue is more distal than and the bladder neck is spared, then you don't necessarily have retrograde ejaculation.
All right. I'll tell you what. Let's go back to the phones. There are several more emails. We'll try to get through some more. Let's go to Ballston Lake. And, John, you're on with Dr. Jonah Marshall.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. 3 years ago, I had my prostate removed robotically, and they thought all cancer was enclosed in the prostate. In the last 9 months, my PSA started rising and increasing fivefold. My numbers are still very low. I had a PET scan recently, the numbers are low. And my question is, this new treatment that you have that just identifies the prostate cancer cells with the PET scan showing nothing, would that be the ideal time to try? I start radiation here in about 10 days. I had Lupron and just waiting for that to take its full effect. Would this be a time to have this new treatment started with the cancer cells that you were mentioning at the beginning of the program?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question, John, and I'm sorry you're going through what we call biochemical recurrence after prostatectomy. It does happen from time to time. And
yeah, hang on. Just pot him down a little bit there, Michael, while Doc is answering. Go ahead.
The Pylarify scan or the PSMA PET scan certainly can show if there's cancer in one spot or another, and it's much more sensitive or the likelihood of detection increases after your PSA gets above the number of 2. Under 0.2, it doesn't really work at all, so we don't check it until it gets to 0.2, but it's usually negative until we get above 2. And if we can't find anywhere else that the prostate cancer is and you're at high risk of recurring near where your prostate was, then we would do radiation. We call it salvage radiation.
All right. You want to follow up, John?
So you're saying it's really to go through with the radiation is the best option at this point. Everything was climbing so fast, like fivefold. Every time I had my PSA checked, the numbers were small, but it was increasing. Then they went to 3 months, and it still was fivefold. So you're saying just go on with the radiation. That's the treatment to take at this point.
Yeah, and of course we're not here to give medical advice on this show.
Right,
and,
you are. That's true.
Generally speaking, that would be what we're going to would be the natural thing to do or the next thing that we would do. And your question about whether or not that targeted therapy would be appropriate for you, it's only been approved for people who have advanced stage prostate cancer that has failed everything else. It's not FDA approved for early stage recurrence.
Dr. Jonah Marshall is our guest today. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Dr. Marshall with Capital Region Urology. And before we go to the next call, you had mentioned earlier that the PSA test guidelines, as dictated or at least suggested by federal medical authorities, kind of got rolled back, and then there was a big increase in cancers. Why did they roll it back? Was it a money issue, or was it false positives? What was going on there?
So there were three different studies done. There were two studies done in Europe and one done in the U.S. And the studies were looking at whether or not treating patients with for prostate cancer improved survival. And so they looked at the most aggressive treatment we have is surgery.
Right.
And the question was, does surgery improve survival? And the two studies in Europe showed that it did, and the one study in the U.S. showed that it did not. And then there was a big meeting of the physicians from all different walks of life, whether it's epidemiology or oncology or urology, and they decided that based on these studies that they didn't think that preventing prostate cancer was going to save lives. Mm-hmm. And so they recommended not checking PSAs, which I felt at the time was a very poor decision, as many of us did. And it was interesting. At the time, I was in practice in Massachusetts, and it was very prominently displayed in the New England Journal of Medicine, and all of the physicians in New England, or not all, but many of them, went by that and stopped checking PSAs. And here in New York, just over the border, people were still checking PSAs. So I think it was also, there was some geographic variation as well.
Dr. Jonah Marshall is with us. Back to the phones, and we go to Jim in Matamoros. Jim, you're on.
Well, it's sort of a joke, but it's true. What do you see when you get up on top of the pyramids?
I don't know. What do you see when you get on top of the pyramids?
Cigarette butts.
Okay. And then what? Do you have a question?
Okay. The question is, does cranberry affect Aerobacter, Bacillus subtilis, and Pseudomonas, or just Escherichia?
Cranberry certainly can decrease your incidence of urinary tract infections, and how it affects the different bacterial strains. I'm sorry, Jim, I just don't know.
Okay, that's a great question, though, and a good joke. Jim, thanks a lot. 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. When you remove a prostate, let me rephrase it. Can you do a partial removal?
No is the answer. Okay. And it has been attempted. Doing partial prostatectomies was attempted. The thing with prostate cancer is that there's usually one dominant tumor and then lots of smaller tumors.
Yeah.
So when we take out the prostate and look at it under the microscope, we'll see one tumor and a bunch of other smaller tumors. The partial prostatectomies that were attempted ended up in bad functional outcomes as well as recurrence of their cancer. So it didn't work on both sides. There's been a big movement to do focal therapy for prostate cancer, and that's been sort of around the edges of urology for about 15 years now. There was just a report on the 15-year outcomes of focal therapy for prostate cancer showing that it seems to be as effective as radiation or prostatectomy. So I think we're going to see an explosion of focal therapy in prostate cancer, which is just burning the tumor, not removing it, but destroying it.
And this is with the laser, with the green laser?
A different type of laser, but there are lasers that we can use to do it. We can also use HIFU, high-intensity focused ultrasound, to basically destroy part of it.
I mean, when they do laser treatments like this, one of the concerns has to be whatever's behind that organ that you are zapping. How do you control the distance the laser goes?
It's very much dependent on which laser you use, and you have to understand the depth of penetration of the laser.
Yeah.
And then place it appropriately. So understanding the physics of the lasers is actually something we learn in residency, and it makes a big difference as to how we use them. We use some to break up kidney stones, which are contact lasers, and some to vaporize tissue. And then there's laser ablation for prostate cancer is on the newer end of what's coming down the pipeline.
Well, we've got a few minutes left here with Dr. Jonah Marshall, and we now head out to Albany, and it's Jim. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, doctor. I have had the UroLift last year, and prior to that, I had somehow I slipped by, and I wound up retaining a lot of 600 or 800 mils or whatever they call it, when I went to this doctor, he said, I really don't have an enlarged prostate, but all the doctor I saw before that said I did. So he did the UroLift, and when he looked inside of me, he saw my bladder had tissue grew over the opening where your urine goes out. And he said, I had 99% chance of success. He did it, okay? and I had no success. And then he turns around and says, because I have too much scar tissue and my bladder is stretched, and he wants me to wear a bladder. I'm not a bladder catheter, and I'm refusing to do that because I'm not getting any more UTIs whatsoever, and I'm on psilocybin and finasteride. Okay. What are my choice? What could the future for something like this?
So, Jim, I got to say, I'm sorry that I don't really understand exactly what's going on in your case by your description, but certainly when the UroLift procedure doesn't work, there's other procedures that we can do to open up the flow of urine. And for anybody who's retaining a large amount of urine, you are at risk of ultimately having kidney damage. So it's important to get that treated and make sure that your bladder drains appropriately so you don't put pressure on your kidneys.
Jim, thanks a lot. Does the UroLift procedure last permanently, or does that also fade with time?
So when it first came on the market, we thought it would probably be only about 5 or 6 years,
yeah.
But it seems to be much more durable than that. We've been doing that now for about 11 years, I believe.
Very good. Let's go and get one more, maybe two more in here before we wrap it. David is in Bethlehem. David, go ahead.
Hi, thank you, doctor, for taking my call. 76, and about 2.5 years ago, my PSA went up to about 6. My doctor said, go to a urologist, and I had an enlarged prostate. So we did a biopsy, and it came out clean, and he put me on dutasteride, 0.5 milligrams, one a day. And my prostate, over a year, dropped to like 2.1. But my question is, though, my urologist said this is a lifelong drug. Will this mask if getting prostate cancer? My dad had prostate cancer, but he didn't die from it. But I've read in the literature that sometimes the medication like the finasteride or dutasteride masks getting cancer because, you know, the PSA is like the canary in a coal mine. And if you suppress it, you're not looking for it then.
So thanks, David, for that call. I think that's a good point that you bring up. Patients that are on finasteride or dutasteride, their PSA drops by half because it does shrink the prostate, and it will make your PSA drop by approximately 50%. And when you're getting a PSA, your physician, whether that's your primary or urologist, should be doubling that in their head while making decisions. It does not mask prostate cancer. In fact, it might make it more easy to detect. And it's not necessarily a lifelong drug. You can try going off it, certainly sounds like it seems to be helping.
David, quick follow-up if you wish.
Okay, yes, thank you. I appreciate that. So is this like a new baseline that it feels? So you look at 2.1, that's going to be like my new baseline, so that should be like 4.2. So if it starts to go up and then we got to take another look at my prostate then. Is that what you're saying, basically?
You got it.
All right.
Okay.
David, thanks a lot for the call. We're just about out of time here. How do people find out more about Capital Region Urology, Dr. Marshall?
You can certainly check us out on our website and go to the St. Peter's website and look at the urology, or stop on by 319 South Manning.
Well, I hope it doesn't take another pandemic for you to come back, man. I come back soon, yeah?
Thanks, Ray. I appreciate it.
And just quickly here before we're done, could you figure out the joke about the pyramid and the cigarette butts?
I'll get back to you in a few years.
All right, fair enough. Well, thanks a lot. I thought a smart guy like a doctor could figure it out. Like, I sure couldn't. Thanks again to Dr. Jonah Marshall of Capital Region Urology for being here today. And support comes from Upstate Dermatology, now an office in Saratoga Springs, providing medical, surgical, and cosmetic dermatology services, 6 locations in the Capital Region, and serving Western Massachusetts. UpstateDerm.com. Well, there you have it. It is a Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. We've done our show. We'll do another one again soon. If you didn't get through, we will do this topic again and again on Medical Monday. It's very important. And thanks to, where the heck is Zach Malloy, my engineer? It's Mongo Mike Bowen at the engineer. Nice job today, sir. Thank you for that. Bob Rathbun screened the calls. Thanks, Bob. I'm Ray Graff. We'll switch it up. Tomorrow we talk weather with News Channel 13 meteorologist Radar Reed Kisselback. That's tomorrow at 2:00.